I refuse to get into the GOAT debate. I don't fucking care. They didn't play against each other. What makes him great is the fact that he's done it now for 21 years at the highest level. Yeah, LeBron's never averaged 35 in a year. Guess what? He's averaged 25 or more for 20 straight years. We're fucking nitpicking. A lot of times we're comparing eras. Like, I'll say this with Michael Jordan, and I don't mean this to be controversial. Michael Jordan, during his heyday, six teams were added to the NBA. There were 90 players added to the NBA. You're not telling me that the league, for a little bit, is going to be a little watered down?
Yeah, I do it big, big, big. I'm coming to win. I do it big, big, big. Say it again. I do it big, big, big. I'm coming to win. I do it big, big, big. Say it again. I do it big.
What is up? What is good? How you living? How you feeling? How you doing? Welcome again back to the Big Podcast with Shaq. We're Shaq. We always do it.
Big.
My man. See, he's prepared because our guest today is always on his P's and Q's. Shaq, may I use the voice to introduce our guest?
Yes, you may use the voice. Actually, no, no. Two white guys here. Let me see your brother voice. Your New York, Brooklyn brother voice.
All right. When it comes to the long ball, there's not too many better. He could be in the desert. He makes it rain in any weather. From the court to the mic, deadly like a black widow. Amongst all the b-ball heads, he's one of the true sickos. His broadcasting career is reaching another orbit. It's my honor to welcome the head coach of the, I'm not going to say it, J.J. Redick up in the house today. Shaq, you're all nice and professional with the glasses. I think JJ's got you ready, man.
Yes, sir. So let's get right to it, JJ.
I was really wondering what word he was going to rhyme with orbit.
Come on, man.
And what rhyme did he use? Norbit?
appreciate you laying out on that one, Adam. Appreciate you laying out on that one.
So what did you think of the games last night?
Playoff basketball. Playoff basketball. I thought, even going back to Sunday night, New Orleans, Oklahoma City. Everybody complains about, like, we obviously saw a huge difference in physicality post-All-Star break. And people have complained about that. If you watch these games, the level of physicality is incredible. And all, my only thing is, let's be consistent. It's my one complaint. Let's be consistent.
You think what we're watching has real physicality in it? I'm going to quote my good friend, J.J. Redick. These dudes are playing against plumbers and electricians.
Here's a question I have for you.
Yes.
Why are you such a hater?
First of all, I'm not a hater.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not a hater. This is how I think, and you are in this category. If they couldn't play with us, they can't play with us. I'm not going to give them all the greatness status yet. That's how I look at it. Could they have played with us? Because, like, when I came in, you know, they always just say, oh, you couldn't have played like this with Ewing and Robinson and all that. So then when I came in and I played with them and I dominated them, and then, you know, when I started dominating, you know, like all these guys they bring in, if they couldn't have played with us, that's how I judge them. You know what I'm saying? Jokers, I think he could have played with us because he has the ability to go inside, outside. That was the only time I had problems with guys. Sabonis, Rick Smits, guys like that. But all these other guys, I don't think they really could have played with us. What do you think?
You're talking about centers?
I'm talking about us, like the real physicality, like the flagrant fouls.
Like, well, I think, I've tried to clarify this because I think anytime the physicality portion comes out, everybody always points to these, the montage videos on social media,
yes.
Right? They point to these montage videos of flagrant fouls. I think there's a distinction between fouling and actual gameplay, right? Do you know what I'm saying?
No, I do not.
So if you go play a game and you go get a bucket and, you know, you see it last night in that Denver game, right at the end. LeBron's complaining about an and one, right? That is gameplay. Bill Laimbeer clotheslining someone, that is a flagrant foul.
That's physicality.
Right, but it's still a foul.
A hard foul.
Right, but there's a difference because that's not part of the game, is what I'm saying.
I would have to disagree.
What do you mean by that?
I know you watch me play. Y'all used to do that shit to me every night for 15 years straight.
Yeah.
That's physicality.
There's would you not agree, though, there's certain players who are naturally physical and referees allow people to be physical back to them? You don't think that? You don't think refs
let me see
had a tough whistle on you?
Let me see. This is a pinch to you, and if you do it to me, it's a pinch to me. But it just depends on, you know, pain tolerance. Whatever the letter of the law says a foul is, it's a foul. Like, I used to hate when people say, oh, you're bigger, you're harder. No.
Well, I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's right. Okay. Yeah, I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying the referees, they're humans, right?
Right.
So whether it's you or Shaq, like, or you or, like, LeBron, it's like, oh, we see this big guy. I think Jokic gets a bad whistle, to be honest with you. I think he gets a bad whistle.
Yeah, but he doesn't really play physical. He's more of a
in the post. They let people body him.
Well, you're supposed to body guy, but like, see, and I think we have different definitions of physical. Mm-hmm. Like Detroit Bad Boys, how they played, that was physical to me.
Yeah,
and that's how I look at physical. Like
Knicks in the '90s.
Oh, psh, yeah, Oakley physical. And them boys. Like that's physical to me. So. It may sound like I'm a hater, but I will always judge it with them.
If I'm not being clear, what I'm talking about, and by the way, I'm not disagreeing that there are certain very specific teams that I think in the history of the NBA, and we just mentioned two of them, were more fit. The 2000 Pistons, right? Those Pistons teams in 2000, yeah. With Rasheed and Chauncey and Tayshaun and Wallace. Those teams were physical. I'm talking about within the flow of the game, there's a level of physicality, and then there's a level of physicality when it comes to hard fouls. And I think there is a difference between the two. If I watch a game and the game is flowing back and forth, you can see physicality off the ball. You can see physicality on the ball. You can see physicality in the post, off screens, whatever it may be. That's what I mean by flow of the game. There's certainly – now, if you've – fucking clothesline somebody, you're going to be suspended for three games. There's a difference in that for sure between past eras and this era.
So who do you think is going to win, the Celtics, the Bucks, or the Knicks?
I'm a terrible prognosticator. I got to be honest with you. I'm a terrible prognosticator. Who do I think?
Yeah, who do you think?
I think the Celtics. And I think there's a difference in this year's team. Everybody talks about the demons of the 22 finals and the demons of the Miami Heat last year in the conference finals. But the addition of Kristaps Porzingis, Drew Holiday as well, of course, but the addition of Kristaps Porzingis, that to me changes their team. Changes their team.
I like the Celtics, but I don't. Because with most teams, they rely on the three ball. And if they don't shoot the three ball well, they don't really have a plan B. Like, I don't really see them going to that plan B. Listen, they've not shot the three ball well in a lot of games, and they still have enough of a cushion to get the number one seed. But they scare me because I've seen many times when that three ball is not going, they don't have anything else to do. And Porzingis is very important. He played well the other night. He's going to have to average high double figures for them to get to the finals and win. The Bucks are very inconsistent. The Knicks are impressing me. Jalen Brunson hasn't been playing great, but I like the way the team relies on him. Like, the last 2 minutes, like, he wasn't really shooting well. And you know this because you're a go-to guy. It doesn't matter how, if you're on or not, when your team believes on you, they just keep coming to you. So he missed a shot, then he shoots that three in the corner, and he makes it, right? Boom. Josh, balling. Josh Hart is balling, and I don't think I wasn't even really thinking about him, and I think that's the missing factor of what's going on with the Knicks. Knicks are impressing me so far. I can't really tell who's going to come out of the East yet. You say Celtics. I want to say Bucks. I wanted to say Philly, but I'm not sure.
No.
I'm not sure.
Philly certainly has the ability to win the East. Is Joel Embiid 100%? If he's not 100%, I'm not sold on them winning the East. If he's 100%, they have a great chance.
As Carnival CFO, that's short for Chief Fun Officer, it's my job to ensure everyone has an unforgettable vacation experience on their Carnival cruise. All you got to do is enjoy all types of fun on ship, from twists and turns on boat, the world's first roller coaster at sea, the moments of blissful relaxation at Cloud Nine Spa. Venture off ship and explore ancient Mayan ruins, or just kick back and do nothing at all on the pristine white sand Caribbean beaches. Take an ATV ride through the jungle or dive into the crystal clear waters of Carnival's new exclusive destination, Celebration Key, welcoming guests in the summer of 2025. Finally, kick off the evening with a craft cocktail at any one of Carnival's dazzling bars and lounges. And take your pick among the delectable restaurants on board, like Emerald's Bistro or Shaq's Big Chicken. Then settle in for an evening of live entertainment at Punchliner Comedy Club or taking a show. Simple as that. You've just created unforgettable vacation memories. Because no one does fun like Carnival. Visit Carnival.com and pack for your next cruise. Ships registry, the Bahamas, Panama. Speaking of Philly guy, he's a Philly guy. Go ahead, Adam. I know you love your Philadelphia
Sixers. So
quiet
over there. So quiet over there.
I know. Listen, you guys are vibing, so I want the energy to be good. I want to take it back because I think Shaq is one of those guys, when you enter the league as a rookie, it's the, like, oh, crap, I made it. Now, your rookie year, JJ, Shaq didn't play the first two games. It was after the Heat won the finals. March 18th, 2007, Shaq drops 20. You had 10 with two threes. I'm just curious, your first year in the league and you see Shaq on the court, do you remember anything from that game, that experience?
Who won that game?
The Magic. You guys went 4-0 against the Heat that year, actually.
Wow. They did?
But Shaq didn't play in all the games.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, all see? Right. See? Yeah, I apologize.
There were... Adam, I was on the phone while... Shaq was having his breakfast and putting this lovely sweatsuit on, and I was calling a work colleague, and I was like, if you had told me as a 16-year-old who had, in Colorado Springs at USA Youth Development Camp, is sitting there with all the guys in June watching the 2001 NBA Finals, that I would one day be just like at Shaq's house doing a podcast with him. Right, didn't exist in 2001. Like, some of this is just surreal to me. So when you get to the NBA and you grew up, I mean, I grew up watching 90s basketball. I grew up like watching Shaq and Penny and Kobe. Ray Allen was like my fucking idol, right? He was my hero. So like the first time you play against these guys, You're almost just in awe. Like, I'm at the point in my life, like, I could go meet whoever. You don't get starstruck. It's not, there's no, like, sense of, oh, my God. But when you're 21, 22 years old and you meet and play against the people that you, like, had on a pedestal growing up, it's different, man. It's different.
I've said this many times. I felt like that when I played against Mike.
Really?
No, but and Ewing. And Ewing.
Why Ewing? Just because of the Hoyas?
No, so we talked about physicality, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people don't notice. I wanted to be like you coming up because Magic was my guy. 6'9", 6'10", handled the ball, sweet passes. My father always like, you got to play physical like Ewing. You got to play physical like Ewing. So I started watching Ewing. Liked the way he played. He was playing mean. He had 33. I wore 33. So, you know, idolizing him and then going to New York for the first time. But it got cut off quick because I was like, oh, my God, hello, Mr. Ewing. Nice to put your hand out. Nice to play you. And he just, shut the fuck up, rookie. I'm about to butt your ass. So now all that shit's out the window. I'm like, okay, now you're trying to fucking punk me in front of my family. All that. But Mike, that motherfucker went baseline and did some shit and threw it under the rim and laid it in and all of a sudden, I was like, this motherfucker is really real. Like, you know, like you said, like sitting in high school and college watching that, and then when he does it to you, I was like, oh, my God, This shit is crazy. When you first got to Orlando.
Hold on. I got a question.
Yeah.
I got a question. And I'm sure you've talked about this before. This is for my own curiosity. The aura of MJ at that time, your rookie year, he's coming off a championship. Matter of fact, he's coming off two championships, sorry. He's coming off the Dream Team. He's at the peak of MJ. What is it like just being on the floor with him, man?
I don't know what God looks like. It's like seeing God.
Really?
Yeah. Because, you know, I went to a couple NBA games when, as a youngster, wasn't really impressed. San Antonio watching David Robinson. David Robinson impressing a little bit, but the stuff that he did on TV and then you see it in real life, he's like, oh, my God, it's really real. Like, he came at me like one of the first players of the game, and in my mind, I was like, I'm not fucking getting dunked on. So I tried to meet him early. The motherfucker slid by me. I bumped him, and he still did that shit, and he laid it up off the – and the crowd went crazy. I was like, fuck. Like, this guy is real. But it also gave me confidence because he was killing us. He was killing Nick and those guys, but he came off the screen one time, and he shot it. I didn't block it, but I was there. I was like, shit, if I can get up early and, you know, maybe, you know, jump a little higher, go a little harder, maybe I can get it. So, you know, in order to be the best, you have to beat the best. I know I wasn't as good as him. And then, you know, jealousy motivates me. Like, my basketball career, I don't know about your career, but it wasn't that good in high school. Number one high school player. Okay in college. Number one college player. Now you're in the league and you got all these guys ahead of me. I want their fucking spots. Why does everybody fucking like Magic Johnson? Oh, the motherfucker smiles a lot. Oh, these fucking big men that they're sucking off. Why? Ewan's mean. David Robinson runs the floor. Motherfucking. And why do they like Mike? Because he fucking, his approach to the game, and he's just fucking dominant. Put it in my brain, and I'm coming after everybody's butt. That's what, you know, always, you know, motivated me to be great. But that same sense you had about playing us and playing me, that's the same thing I feel about Mike.
So we have a segment that's sponsored by The General. It's all about breaking through. And I'm curious, we've seen this with young players in the playoffs. Sometimes it's like a Giannis or a Jokic breaking through and finally winning that title. But if you had to look at the landscape of the NBA right now and focus more on the younger guys, anyone that you think could have a breakthrough moment in this playoff run and establish themselves and start building something going forward?
Yeah. I think probably last year Jokic was the guy that broke through. You know, someone who had won regular season MVPs, gotten to the Western Conference Finals, you know, played a year without Jamal and without MPJ. So, like, I think we were hoping that there would be that breakthrough. I think this year the three guys that jump out are Ant, Shea, and Tatum. Those are the three guys to me. In the Western Conference with Ant and Shea, great regular seasons. Shea's an MVP candidate for sure. Ant, to me, is like, when we talk about like the next face of the NBA, like, he could be that guy. Because he's the shit you were writing down, right? About all the players, all the great players in the 90s. Like, he's got a lot of those qualities,
he
man.
He does.
He's got a lot of those qualities. And then with Tatum, he's just been so close. You know, if they win this year, like, it's a big moment for him and sort of how we view his legacy in Boston. Those are the three guys.
I'm looking for KD to break through.
Okay.
Because we have similar things we have to go through. You know, of course, his first two championships were questionable. And now you hear people say, well, he has to win it without. So I'm anxious to see if he can break through it and get it done so he
people
can get
people were questionable
back.
About your championship?
Yeah.
And your legacy?
When I left L.A. Oh, he's done. He's old. Boom, boom, boom. And then I had to buckle down and get one more. So.
Isn't that funny that it just, for guys at your level, that no matter what you do, people just want more. It's never enough.
Yeah, it's called, to me, it's called a motivation.
Have you ever looked up Shaq's stats from the finals in 2000, 2001, and 2002?
Yeah, because it was against my Sixers. And when you look,
it's a fucking joke.
It's like 45 and 20. Hey, and you're like, this is disgusting.
It's like, what? 35 and 18 for the finals. 39 and 17 for the finals. And 32 and 16 for the finals.
And that's one reason I hate when y'all throw around that D word.
I don't throw it around, bro. Stop.
You're right. I apologize.
JJ, but you have to understand, he's talking about white media people.
But hey, hold on. Those numbers that you throw around with four motherfuckers on me.
Exactly. Those pictures are incredible.
Yeah, with four people on me. This episode of The Big Podcast with Shaq is brought to you by The General. You know, Shaq loves The General. Before the league, before the rings, before I got my big break, I've been rocking with The General. The General has been offering quality coverage for 60 years. You already know The General was there for Shaq when I needed him. Low rates and flexible payment options to keep you covered. If you're ready for your big break, you know what to do. Visit thegeneral.com to get a quote today. Again, visit thegeneral.com to get a quote today. And it wouldn't be The Big Podcast without The General.
You guys took that year off in Miami, by the way. You guys took that year off, I feel like.
Yeah, we did.
You had the championship hangover.
Yeah, no, well, for me, it was, and like I said this the other day, and people didn't understand it, winning is boring. And I said it's about Golden State. Like, when you win, and you win, and you win, and for me, you win, you win, you win, you ain't shit, get traded. Oh, yeah, motherfucker, get in shape, win again. What else is there for me to do? Right? And then Pat kind of switched up the team, and, you know, body fat and this and that. It was, and then me, like, I was getting older, and I was like, not saying I didn't want to give up, but, like, you know, what else did I have to prove? You know, I was going through some, you know, personal stuff too, and, you know, and then I got traded. I don't know if you heard the story. So we were a terrible year, and Pat's fucking pissed. So Jason William is a half a millisecond late, and fucking Pat tells him, get out. And, you know, I'm the leader of the team. I'm like, nah, man, we're gonna work through this somehow. No. You get out. Motherfucker put me out. So we get into a little tussle, Lonzo, UD. The funny part of the story is I go home and Uncle Jerome, who you met, Uncle Jerome came in with a cigar. You know that U-Haul place down the street? I was like, yeah, I know the fucking U-Haul place. He said, you better go get you some boxes because your ass about to be up out of here. So I wasn't paying no mind. So the next time, and these motherfuckers set me up nice too. So the fucking next day, because I was injured and I had a fucking MRI thing. You know how you're not supposed to move in an MRI? I know I didn't fucking move because I fell asleep in the motherfucker. Gang, 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 gang. So I get out and the doctors, they whispering, they was like, oh, you got to go back in. I'm like, motherfucker, for what? So I go back in another hour. Now when I fucking get out, I look at the phone and Uncle Jerome, you need help at the U-Haul place? I'm like, fuck you talking about? You just been traded. I said, motherfucker, what? So I'm fucking calling people. So I said, okay, I'm done getting traded. So I get in my car because I want to go see that I've been traded. As soon as I get over there, they got about 30 police waiting on me at the fucking thing because they know I was going to go in there and tear that motherfucker up. I was like, just let me go get my shit. They're like, Shaq, we can't let you go in.
Didn't let you go into the facility?
No. Oh, no. No. The motherfuckers was waiting outside. They did not let me go in the facility. But, yeah, you are right. Yeah, we did fucking, you know, take that year off.
Leah, let me jump in with one. I looked back, so you both start your career with the Magic. JJ has one career dunk. Shaq, you have one career three. If you guys were able to swap bodies and skill sets for one game, how would you have approached that game? Shaq, you can lead off.
Before the game, I would announce myself as the Black Steph Curry. And I would tell the world, oh, I'm hitting 10 threes tonight. And, of course, all you motherfuckers would be like, oh, no, you won't. And, bro, I wish I was a fucking shooter like you and Steph and those guys. I do. I really do. Like I always wanted to play inside, but now when I see these big guys step out, I get kind of jealous. I'm like, I wish I can do that. If I had your fucking jump shot, shit.
If I had Shaq's body and skill set, oh, man.
You'd be cold.
You know, it doesn't come out often, Adam. Somewhere deep inside my soul is a little bit of anger that just lives there. And I don't really pay attention to it, but it's there. And if I had the opportunity to let that anger out on the court with just fucking punishing people, dunking on people, I try to block every shot, oh, it'd be so great.
I honestly think it could be like a good form of therapy if, like,
yes,
you could play against 12-year-old kids and just pretend you're Shaq and just destroy them for a day.
Hold on, you only had one dunk?
Yeah. I could dunk. I just, you know what? Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you. Adam, in eighth grade, I hit this growth spurt and I went from like 5'6 to 6'3. And in that 6-7 months, I went from like, you know, you probably could dunk at a young age, but when you're like 12, 13 years old, when you're 12, 13 years old, you, in the low backboards,
yes,
you do the board taps, yeah, right? So I went from board tapping to being able to like dunk with two hands at like 13, eighth grade, right? All of a sudden, in 6 months, I get undercut three. I'm not capping.
You're not fucking dunking at 13.
In eighth grade, yeah. First time I dunked was in eighth grade.
I wasn't dunking until 17, 6'11". You weren't fucking dunking at 13. Stop.
There was something physically wrong with you then. Should have seen a doctor, man. What the fuck? You couldn't dunk at 6'11"?
No. You know.
How's that possible?
No, I couldn't. I couldn't. And this is crazy. My junior year, the whole season, I could never dunk. And I tried to dunk in the game one time and missed, was embarrassed and was scared. So I played against real short guys in high school. So one game, I got fucking 40, three quarters. I'm doing my magic shit. I cross a motherfucker up at the top of the key because, you know, they pressing. I go to finger roll it, and I miss. My father, drill sergeant, walks on the floor in the middle of the game. Timeout. Like, man, we in the middle of the game. Motherfucker, call a timeout. So I call a timeout. Bring your ass outside. What you doing? I said, man, I'm working on my magic. And before I can get the Johnson out, bow. Fuck Magic Johnson. Be Shaq. Start dunking. So now, in front of everybody, and like my father was the type, don't cry. Don't fucking cry. Don't make a face. Don't, like, that's why I had to take it. And I walk in the gym and the whole fucking arena's like. So the fucking coach is looking at me and everybody, my boy is looking at me, and I just tell the motherfucker, don't nobody shoot. Give me the fucking ball. And then I was so mad at him, I started like really fucking dunking. I tried to rip the fucking rim off. And then we went back and watched the film. He's like, see, stupid motherfucker, when you dunk, you intimidate people, they get scared. And that's when I started dunking my junior year. And I stopped shooting the little jumper and all that shit. It was just dunks, drop tips, and jump hooks for the rest of my life, for the rest of my career. And that's how I started dunking. Like, I just couldn't. I had something called Osgood Sliders, and my knees were real weird. Like,
yeah. Just when you hit your growth spurt.
Yeah.
That's the worst. So that year I had it.
But
that's an incredible story, by the way.
Hold on. Back to the story. You weren't dunking in eighth grade. Stop it.
All right.
Fuck out of here.
So I'm an end of June birthday.
Got it.
End of June birthday. Okay? So I turned 14. I turned 14 after eighth grade. Right? I'm June 24th. I vividly remember being at an AU tournament in eighth grade in April or May and in warmups and going up and dunking two hands off 2 feet on the left side. The left-right footwork, bam, two. Yes, okay. So all of a sudden, anyways, I get undercut 3 times in 6 months. I break my wrist 3 times, right?
Damn.
Coming off of that, I start high school, all that stuff. Coming off of that, I was... If there was anybody in the vicinity of me, it was like my brain and body had been programmed to like jump off 2 feet, you know, get in the body. Yeah. I'm not jumping off 1 foot. Not jumping off 1 foot. And I stopped trying. And then you get to the league. But by the way, I want to say this. This is what people don't understand. This is what people don't understand. So high school, I dunked. I had a couple dunks in college, whatever. You get to the NBA. It is the best athletes. I say this as humbly as possible. I, as an NBA athlete, was more athletic than 99% of people. Relative to the rest of the NBA, I was in the 1% of the worst athletes. That's how athletic these guys are. So, like, I tried dunking one other time in my career. We used to have this play in Orlando with Jacques Vaughn my last year. I would come off a pin down on the left side and curl. as that was happening, Jameer would have the option to either hit me or post Aaron Aflalo on the right block. So we're in Toronto, and we had been running it like in practice. And I noticed in practice, like, if everybody was paying attention to Aaron Aflalo and the low man big wasn't really paying attention, like, I could actually just keep running towards the basket, and that's my left-right footwork. So I'm like, oh, I could maybe get a yam in a game. So we're in Toronto, and Aaron gets the ball. I make the curl. My guy's 3 feet behind me. He hits me with a bounce pass, perfect timing. I do my left-right footwork. I'm high enough to dunk that motherfucker. And Amir Johnson just, like, tippy-toes it. You know what I mean? And I'm like, oh, shit, I got to adjust. And I laid it in. Like, I couldn't have dunked.
Right.
So, like, it took my one dunk was off an offensive rebound and a back cut out of the corner. No one was within 5 feet of me.
So my three.
Your three.
We were up big. And, you know, we were up in Orlando and Brian Hill. I said, man, call a play for me to shoot a three. He says, no. And if you look at the play, the pass was supposed to go to Penny, but I was so mad he didn't call it that I intercepted it, right? And just took it and threw it up, and it went off the glass and went in. But I had to fake like I knew what I was doing when I fucking walked in the thing.
Did you shoot threes in All-Star games?
No, never. I'm not a shooter. I'm a prolific MF scorer. You know what MF scorer means?
Motherfucker.
No, most frequently. I would never say motherfucker on this podcast. Interesting. Sorry about that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
To what happened earlier where JJ called Shaq a hater, and we've dealt with that, I think I've diagnosed it, JJ. Shaq does not hate on the younger people. He just has an adjective problem. He doesn't like when words like dominant or great get used for people that maybe haven't earned it yet.
Thank you.
I think Shaq loves the word dominant, but he hates the word dominant. And you're someone that has studied the game and you look at analytics. Do you think there's anyone that is even close to that level of dominance? Like, are there dominant tiers in your mind?
Yeah. Dominant as Shaq?
Hold on. No. I'm going to make it even better. Was Dwight dominant? Yeah, let's go. It's a yes or no question.
This is the weird part to me.
It's a yes or no question.
And I was going to get
I'm just asking, was he dumb?
I'm going to give you this gift.
Don't give me nothing. On your own. The question. Was he dominant? Yes or no?
I played with him.
I know that. And that's why.
He was dominant.
Dominant?
Yes.
All right, cool.
He was dominant.
Okay.
He had a run in Orlando.
Okay.
He was dominant. Now, did he – so I want to answer Adam's question first, and then I want to get to something.
Yeah.
As it relates to Dwight. I hate the word dominant as well.
Thank you.
I hate it. I think when you say the word dominant about a basketball player, like, the image that comes into my mind is Shaquille O'Neal on the Los Angeles Lakers. And there's not really another player that, like, immediately comes to mind. I think it has to do with physicality. I think it has to do with, like, a fear factor. RJ talked about this on my podcast. Yes. He's like, NBA teams used to build rosters around having four big guys, right? My issue with the word is this, and I apologize if this doesn't make sense to you, and I apologize, Adam, if it doesn't make sense to you either. There is a difference to me between production and the aesthetic of how that production happens. The aesthetic meaning what we watch. So, like, Jokic, for instance, like, you're talking about he's got the slowest, laziest game ever, right? In some senses, he's dominant, but not in the sense of the way you dominated. LeBron as a scorer. How we talk about Kobe, how we talk about MJ as a scorer, right? It's all about how we view it versus the actual production. I think there's a difference, and we get so caught up in aesthetics. That's my issue with the word dominant. Because I've seen motherfuckers, I'll say this, I've seen guys dominate a game and have 8 points. Like, we're talking about Josh Hart.
No.
Josh Hart?
Dominate a game.
Dominate a game.
And not have 8 points.
Who was the MVP of those first two games for the Knicks?
For the Knicks, Hart.
Yeah.
All the way. But hold on.
Again, it goes back to the word dominate. That's why I don't like using the word dominate, because everybody has a different interpretation of it.
So my interpretation is definitely production, right? So when you ask who dominated the Knicks game, it's Hart, because his production, 22, 19. He's only averaging 9 points.
The rebounds.
Yeah, the rebounds.
Loose balls.
So dominant to me is production. And dominant to me is the motherfucker can't be stopped. One guy, two guy, three guy, hack a shack, build a roster, during the offseason have secret fucking meetings and fucking complain about them. That's dominant to me. And then do it 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, 5 year. That's dominant to me. Like, you could, like, you're right. You could be dominant but for a game, but it has to be an incredible game to dominate.
That's I think, what gets lost in the sauce a little bit is the longevity portion. When we talk about certain players, certain teams, certain athletes, it is, you're talking about being bored with winning. It's really fucking hard to maintain that level of intensity and competitiveness. Like, it's one of the reasons that LeBron is so great. I have refused, literally, and people will be like, you said this in 2017 when you played against him. Well, no shit, I was playing against him. Of course I said he was the best player ever. I refuse to get into the GOAT debate. I don't fucking care. They didn't play against each other. I do not fucking care. What makes him great, well, a bunch of things, but what has made him great is the fact that he's done it now for 21 years at the highest level. Like, you talk about scoring, that's great. So one guy averaged 35 a year. Yeah, LeBron's never averaged 35 in a year. Guess what? He's averaged 25 or more for 20 straight years. No one's had more than 15 of those years. Like, that to me is, he's a fucking scorer. But again, it looks differently. He plays differently. So it's all in the eye of the beholder.
LeBron is great to me because he's always done it the right way. When I played with LeBron, he was the greatest young leader I've ever seen.
Man, stop stealing stuff from my podcast.
No,
man.
He was. No, like, because I... No, because when I mean, listen, I know he was, and I'm such a dominant personality. Like, I'm the guy that no matter what fucking team I'm going to, this is my shit. Give a fuck what nobody says. But when I got there, like, he just ran it so perfectly. The way he treated the guys, the way he treated the organization, the way he was coached, the way he looked out for guys, like, I don't even have to do nothing. And, you know, we definitely had a chance to win. We were in first the whole year, and then fucking Big Baby with his wild ass broke my fucking hand. I had to be out for 6 weeks, and we came out and lost to Boston. I wish I wouldn't have had that absence away from LeBron, but he was one of the greatest young leaders that I've always seen. So he will always be in that conversation. The only thing I don't like about the conversation is they don't put my boy's name in it. You're right, I don't give a fuck who either. But if you're going to be throwing names around, you got to have my boy's name in it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Dwight?
Dwight. That's like saying, what are the best luxury cars out there? Lexus or a Beamer? Motherfucker, you got to put the Mercedes in there too.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I don't give a fuck. I don't care.
I truly don't.
But Mike, LeBron, or Kobe, now y'all debate. That's all I say about it.
I think it's fair to just say there are different tiers of greatness. And you could, by the way, like, I think it's fair even to be like, who's your Mount Rushmore? Who's your four greatest? Or who's your five greatest? Who's your 10 greatest? Whatever it may be. Like, we're fucking nitpicking. By the way, a lot of times we're comparing eras, we're comparing different rules, we're comparing the fact that, look, like, I'll say this with Michael Jordan, and I don't mean this to be controversial, but, like, everybody talks about all these, the context of this era. Michael Jordan, the Dallas Mavericks were added as the 23rd team in 1981. Jordan was drafted. During his heyday, six teams were added to the NBA. There were 90 players added to the NBA. Like, that does that not water down? I'm not talking playoffs, by the way. No fucking chance we're talking playoffs. Does that not water down the regular season to a degree? You lived it, right? You yeah. played against some of those teams. You played against the Bobcats, right? When they first came out.
Yeah.
Like, if we add two teams in 2 or 3 years, we get a Vegas franchise or a Seattle franchise, you're not telling me that the league for a little bit is going to be a little watered down?
Maybe, a little bit. You know what I've always liked about you is you always speak your honest opinion. And, you know, people always get on us because they don't understand our language. When you made the comment about plumbers and electricians, I knew exactly what you were talking
about. Plumbers and
firemen. Same thing. Plumbers, firemen, electrician, same thing. I understood what you was talking about. But you said something the other day I didn't think I would hear from you. You said you had the dickhead syndrome when you were in college. Mm. Can you elaborate on that? Because I heard it, but I was on my phone. I heard it, and I was like, why do you? I'm like.
Use that exact word.
That's what you said. Hold on. You said I wrote it down so I wouldn't be messed up. Where is it at? Go ahead, Adam.
Are you sure I didn't call myself a prick?
No, you said dickhead
syndrome. I know I've used that before.
What did it say? Dickhead syndrome? Yeah. No. Dickhead behavior.
Oh, okay.
I apologize. Yeah, you said, I apologize. Yeah. You said in Duke you had dickhead behavior. And I never thought I would hear a guy like yourself say that about yourself. Can you elaborate what you meant by that?
Is it fair to say, I'll answer the question. This is just to frame it a little bit. Is it fair to say that you have some shit to you? Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
I have some shit to me. I've had a bunch of teammates that have some shit to them. I like that. You know what I mean by that?
Right.
I didn't quite appreciate it when I was in college, so I didn't know how to channel that in like a positive way. So when I got to Duke, it was my dream to go to Duke. I show up. We play 10 or 12 games either at home or on like neutral sites. Indiana, we played UCLA, we played Ohio State and Greensboro. My first road game was at Clemson. I came out for warmups and I was like, oh, yeah, the whole student section there screaming things at me, making fun of me, talking about my family. That was like my entire college career, right? And so the response to that as a 19-year-old is like, I just was a dickhead on the court. Like, it wasn't a in a positive way either. It was outlandish. It was just bad. And then off the court, you know, particularly my first 2 years, well, really my first 2 years off the court, I like didn't know how to like process and balance life. So you go to college and you've got basketball, academics, and social. And for my first 2 years, it was like social, basketball, academics, right? That was how the priority list went. And that caused a bunch of problems too. So that's what I mean by that.
Good.
Yeah, that's what I mean by that.
Can I tell him my shit before you ask the question?
Yeah, of course.
My shit was I never worked out in the summer.
Even as a pro?
No.
What the fuck did you do all day?
And the reason why is for what? Who am I working out for? The only guy I really got to worry about is Duncan. So, you know, I would get a lot of flack for not coming in shape. But my thing was, it's a long season. I'm going to work my way into shape. Right? That was my only shit. And, you know, especially when I started having kids, I thought it wasn't fair to them that I'd be gone all the time. Yeah. Gone 9 months. So, summertime, living in Orlando, our days were, you know, wake up. What do y'all want to do? Yeah. Go on the lake, yeah. Universal Studios, this and that. And so that was my only shit. I took a lot of flack for it. But my mentality was, for who? For what? Because I'm getting 7 points a quarter. Skinny Shaq, medium Shaq, fat Shaq. I'm getting 28-10, right? And then, you know, boom, boom, boom. By All-Star game, okay, motherfucker. Now you got to get it cracking. And that was my shit. Like, I hear a lot of people talking about, oh, if he was in shape. And my response is, if I came in shape or out of shape, I'm still going to be fucking Shaq. It doesn't matter. But that was my shit. During the summer, I never worked out. And then when I was with Phil, he told me, don't work out. I said, man, relax. He said, they fucking beat you up this summer and just relax. So, you know, before I met Phil, that was my strategy anyway. But then when I met him and he told me not to do it, it was kind of a relief. That's why if you look at our Laker championships, you see three different checks. You see skinny Shaq, you see medium Shaq, and then that last Shaq was swole Shaq. And then I got to Miami, Pat was like, fuck you. You work it out. And I had to work out that summer, and I dropped all the way back to 325. But that was always my shit, because I was like, work out for who? I'm going to kill all these motherfuckers. I don't give a fuck who you put in front of me. And
Adam, you see why when I hear the word dominant, I have the image of Shaq in my head.
It's only him. It's him and like Wilt. Yeah.
There's part of me is just like, I don't want to use the word jealousy, because I'm not jealous of people, but like
jealousy.
There's a little why?
I wish I had your fucking jumper. Your shit was sweet, bro.
It was. There's a level of envy. Even like in some of my peers, like not to that level, they're like, I'm just, you know, but there are some of my peers and I'm like, man, I am doing everything possible all day long to fucking survive in this league. And I'm watching this motherfucker eat. Like Dwight was like that. You know, I'm worried about my sleep. I'm worried about my diet. I got to lift. I got to do my activation. I got to do my mobility stretches. I got to do my extra shooting. And then we get done with shoot around and this dude's eating 5 Krispy Kreme donuts and 2 Pepsis. Right. And I'm like, man, fuck you, dude.
That was me.
Oh,
you brought up Mount Rushmores before. I feel like we've done one every episode. And the Mount Rushmore that I wanted to pose to JJ Shaq, it's changed 3 times through this episode. First, I was like, I want to do the Mount Rushmore of best shooters with ugly form. And then I thought, no, let's do best basketball sickos. Just like people that JJ, but now I'm realizing I want a Mount Rushmore of NBA assholes. Just the people that didn't give a fuck about anybody else that were just the most ruthless people ever. So Mount Rushmore of all-time NBA assholes.
Like, do you mean this in a good way? Do you mean it in a good way?
Yeah, like a good way. I believe Shaq is a good-natured person, but when he played, dude was an asshole. I would never want to be on Shaq's bad side because then I would experience that.
All right,
and so yeah, you go first.
I'll go first. And these guys are all my friends, so they're not going to take it the wrong way. Gary Payton was an asshole. I seen that man talk to all my guards about their mamas, about their wives, about their kids. Kevin Garnett was an asshole. Seen him do the same thing. Lonzo Mourning was an asshole because he always tried to be mean. And then the last one. Who's the last one? Antoine Walker was an asshole. Okay. He talked a lot. And every time he hit that fucking shot, he always did that motherfucking, he always did that fucking shimmy. I wanted to kill that motherfucker one time. We was playing, he hit a fucking shot, he did the shimmy. I was like, all right, Antoine, we'll beat your ass in the back. You better cut that shit out. So all these guys are friends, so like they'll understand when they won't take it personal. Hopefully. You work with an asshole, but I ain't gonna say nothing.
RJ?
Nope.
Kendrick?
I don't know where this is going.
Kendrick had a Shaq, what did you think about Kendrick? Well, hold on, we need
Shaq,
to
I am a self admitted asshole. Like I'm fine having the conversation, but all right. Are we doing just teammates or just people we've observed in our careers?
Anybody. Like Kobe would be on mine.
Okay. Man, I don't know, man. Kobe was really good to me. I got to be honest with you. I mean, he talks shit to me sometimes, but like.
Yeah.
He was really good to me, so I can't put him on that list. I mean, KG, for sure.
Yeah, KG.
KG, yeah. I put Rashid up there.
Oh, yeah, Rashid.
It's funny, man. I would have loved to have been both those guys' teammates. I never got the chance. Teammates, Hedo Turkoglu, for sure.
Hedo?
Yeah.
That was my boy.
He, my rookie year, he didn't like that I would play hard in practice. So
I hate that shit, too.
There was one time.
I fucking hate you people.
Yeah, and I'm trying to survive. I'm trying to get playing time.
Relax. God,
he posted me up, looked at me. Fucking elbowed me in the side of the head. 2 practices later, I got a breakaway. He undercuts me, gets thrown out of practice. By the end of the year, we kind of became friends. So I'm thinking, like, this is good, man. We started going to dinner on the road together, hanging on the plane. This is good. Second year comes in shoot around in Charlotte. Again, like, I'm not even doing anything. We're not, like, we go live, you know, it's the Heat shit, like, yeah, with Stan and Pat. But we're going live, and same thing. Posted me up, looked at me, bam, hit me. That time, I actually got a black eye. So I got to go to lunch, you know, an hour later with my parents. They're like, what happened? I'm like, Hito hit me again. It's like that type of shit. You know who I'm going to throw in there?
Yeah.
Underrated asshole. And I love him to death. TJ McConnell. TJ McConnell. Like, who is TJ McConnell?
I like TJ, Indiana. You
know, yeah, Indiana, yeah, like Indiana.
Rudy is what I call him. Rudy. Yeah, I call him Rudy. I call him Rudy.
That's great. That's great.
I love that. I love TJ McConnell. All right, so JJ, you and Shaq both agree on something, and that it's, I think you guys have issues with voting for NBA awards. Shaq's issue is whenever we talk about the MVP, he's always saying what matters more, individual production or standings. If I could make you the commissioner for the day, how would you change the way that the NBA votes on awards? And that includes who gets to vote on the awards themselves.
Interesting. I would like a better definition of a couple of the awards, particularly most improved player. I think that's the one that, like, should we have a cutoff for, you know, you got to get it by your fifth year. It's all fifth year players and under. There's certain times where, like, Shea almost got it last year. I'm like, dude, this dude was a star the year before. Like, did he get better? Yeah, he got better. But, like, I think most improved to me has always been about, like, a guy playing a completely different role or developing a completely new skill set, right? A guy goes from, oh, this guy's a 30% three-point shooter shooting two a game to all of a sudden he's a 40% three-point shooter shooting eight a game. That's like, okay, that screams most improved to me. MVP is interesting because I think everybody has a different definition of it. I said this the other day when I did my awards show for the Old Man of the Three. MVP, if we're weighting like all the individual awards, and let's say we start at a baseline of it's 50% individual performance, 50% team performance, right? I would – hold on. Let me get somewhere. That's the baseline, Shaq. That's the baseline.
Okay, I'll just say go ahead.
Okay? Fuck, man. MVP to me is you have to weigh the team performance a little bit more. All NBA, you weigh the individual performance a little bit more. Mm. But Shaq disagrees with me, and I'd love to get his thoughts on this matter.
It's a singular award.
The MVP.
Most valuable player.
Yeah.
Player. Has nothing to do with the team.
Okay.
If you're a bad review.
So you're saying we should just give it to the best player every year, regardless of what his team did?
Okay. No, like, so we should interject the rules a little bit. Like, for example, if you're 1 through 8 and your team is in the playoffs, you qualify for most valuable player. Mm-hmm. Right? You qualify for most valuable player. I've always thought it was stats, how you played, and your effect on the game. Right?
Yeah.
If you put SGA with Charlotte, would he be talked about as MVP? Hmm. Would he?
Why'd you bring up Charlotte? Why'd you just throw Charlotte in there? That's weird.
Good.
That's just the first team that popped in your head?
Well, they're not in the playoffs.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's so a great
just Charlotte. But, like, so, I mean, so now, this year is very interesting because my criteria and everybody else's criteria is working. SGA is the baddest boy in the league, by far.
You think he's the best player in the league?
One of the best players in the league. He's the most valuable player this year, in my opinion. Okay. One of a few guys that had 30 points 50, 55 yeah. times, right?
Yeah.
His team was number one and number two, and great on the game. Like, let's switch a little bit.
Hold on. I want to say one thing real quick. I want to say one thing. Actually, I want to say two things to your point. Number one, as it relates to SGA, I think what is frustrating now as a voter and as someone...
You get to vote?
Yeah. They asked me to vote. I voted.
How the fuck you get to vote and I don't?
I get an email that says, do you want to vote?
That's some bullshit.
Yeah, Shaq, you don't respond to your emails. That's the issue.
Well, apparently this guy doesn't watch the NBA.
Yeah, according to your fucking, according to your asshole friend.
No,
he's on that list too.
I want to say something. Yeah. What is frustrating to me is there's a lot of guys, at least the 2 years I voted, there's a lot of guys that deserve it. And everybody gets into this argument for a player. And by doing that, then they inherently get into the argument of why so-and-so doesn't deserve it. And that, I think, gets frustrating at times. Because my criteria can be a little bit different than your criteria, can be a little bit different than her criteria. Like, and that's okay, right? That's why they have 100 voters. I just don't like the argument against people. The other thing, too, is one of the arguments that has popped up recently, and particularly as it relates to Jokic, is this idea that we're setting a precedent now. If he gets three in 4 years, let's say, if he gets three in 4 years, we'll look at the history of the NBA. Guess what? Voters fucked up a bunch of MVPs.
They sure did.
He should have had more. MJ should have had more. Duncan probably should have had more. There are years where the fucking Spurs, there's years where the Spurs had 60 wins and didn't get anybody on the all-NBA list. Like, voters have fucked up. What? So we're gonna make the argument now that we shouldn't vote the right way. This is not an argument for Jokic. We're saying we shouldn't vote the right way now because we fucked up in the past. What? That is illogical.
It should be Hall of Famers and ex-players only. 50 Hall of Famers and 50 ex-players. That's it. That's how voting should be. All these earthlings like Stephen A. and Shannon Sharp and, you know, Mad Dog and all that. No, I'm just saying, like, they shouldn't get votes. It should be 50 Hall of Famers and 50 ex-players that they understand again. For example, like, this is kind of weird to me. Victor Wembanyama, all those records he broke, right? According to everybody else's criteria, his team didn't make the playoffs. So should he be a candidate for Defensive Player of the Year? Stats-wise, yes, but everybody else's criteria-wise, no.
Yeah.
And then Rudy plays on a great team.
Yeah.
Plays on a great team. But when Biana's stats are killing Rudy's stats, so that's the only problem.
I had a hard time with that one, to be honest with you.
I did, too.
I had a really hard time with that one. And I thought Bam was deserving, too. I thought Bam defensively was great this year. I had him third. I ended up with Rudy at first. You know, that's fine. You can
over Wembanyama.
That's where I ended up.
So you probably got Dwight over me as the Magic's best big man ever. I fucking dare you to say it. What? I fucking dare you to say it.
How about this?
Ask the question. Since you motherfucking give motherfucking awards away.
How about this?
No. The best Orlando Magic big man ever. Say it. It's only three. Me, Dwight, and Greg fucking Kite. Say it. Go ahead. Say it. I want the order right now.
Like, I don't want to get into this with you right now. But when people have tried to have this discussion with me, and I've done this in public forums, by the way. I'm sure I've did this on First Take, and I've definitely done this on the podcast a couple times. Like, just so you know, and I'm not just saying this because I'm right here, but when people talk about the top 10 players, the Mount Rushmores, or the greatest, I'm like, God, there are certain guys that we don't talk about enough. We don't talk about you enough. We don't talk about Tim Duncan enough to me. We don't talk about certain guys enough. You are the best big man in Orlando Magic history. Like, I don't, like, what? Why would you even question that?
I'm just asking. No,
Adam,
I mean, Dwight does have better career stats with the Magic.
See.
I'm only kidding, Shaq. I'm only kidding.
See?
So, The Magic have been trying to get me to come back to a game for a few years, and I just haven't been able to get down there. And I see Dante Marcatelli at a game in Brooklyn in December, and he's like, "Hey, we'd really like to honor you at a Magic game." I don't know what they call it, the Ring of Honor.
Yeah, Ring of Honor.
I don't know. So I'm like, okay. I was like, I'm actually taking my kids to Disney World over All-Star break for the first time. You guys have a game the night before. I'll just come in a day early, right? And I'm not looking at the schedule. I'm not really paying it. I'm just like, I'll come in the day early. They retired your jersey the night before. And then they gave me a jersey, like, at center court. I'm like, I should have picked any other date. Like, for me to follow you up. Like, come on, man. That was just bad, bad timing, bad planning on my part. Bad planning.
You rode in the wake of Shaq's jersey retirement.
So you could have did a podcast with anybody. The LeBron and your podcast, very interesting. Very intelligent how you speak about the game. But why him and why now? I never even knew you guys were friends.
Oh, man. You know what's funny? I explained this recently because a lot of people have asked me about this. So LeBron and I met when I was 16 at that Colorado thing.
Right.
And he was 15. I was a year ahead. We're the same age, essentially. I'm 6 months older, but he was a year behind me in school. We met at that camp. And obviously, he went straight to the pros. I played at Duke. And there was always been like a level of respect. Like, we would acknowledge each other at games, maybe make a joke. Later on in our careers, we'd, you know, I'd ask him, hey, what's the last great bottle of red burgundy you had? You know, shit like that. Like, I'd never hung out with the guy prior to us doing the podcast. I think part of it for me was like trying to create something that is different than most podcasts. That was, I think, the biggest thing. And then the fact that it was with him, the fact he's still playing and still has that like fresh perspective on the game right now, which, you know, I'm 3 years out. You're 12 years out.
Yeah, 12.
Yeah. The further you get out, like you do, I watch every night. I study this shit, but you do lose a little bit of the perspective of the current game. And as we said, he's one of the all-time greats. So just the mix of all that stuff just felt like a fun thing to do. I appreciate you giving a shout-out, man. Thank you.
One thing that you guys really harp on, I know it matters a lot to you, is the concept of basketball IQ. Not everyone has it, is what we are beginning to realize as fans. And so I'm curious, have you ever played with someone or against someone that you didn't realize had a super high basketball IQ and it even shocked you? Whether they became a teammate later or you experienced them on the court and they were seeing things at a level that you didn't expect?
It's a great question. I want to clarify something. I think there's everybody has basketball IQ. I think there's just levels to it. And I think there are certain guys who use that to their advantage to create some level of separation or advantage. And it could be like a little marginal thing, or it could be, you know, sheer exploitation. Like, I think Jokic, the way he sort of puts the chess pieces in place, I think that's exploitation, right? The guy that immediately pops to mind, just because I didn't know him, and I signed there in 2017, I met Joel 2 weeks before free agency. We were at Steve Nash's soccer charity event in New York. He was still coming back from his knee thing, and I was going to be a free agent in 2 weeks. So I said, Steve, I'll come. I'll put the uniform on, but I'm not running around, and I'm not going to tear my groin two weeks before free agency. So Joel and I ended up being on the same team. We just sat and watched the game and talked the whole time and hit it off. And then once I started playing with him, I was like, holy shit, this guy just – he's smart. Even I know it's a point of contention, there are certain times where he certainly baits the fouls and exaggerates some shit. I'm not a fan of that. But the level of intelligence required to be going into your dribble package at the elbow and time when you gather the ball right as the defender puts his hand out and go up and make the shot, like, that's basketball intelligence. That's a level of basketball intelligence. That's the guy that pops to mind. You got really quiet over here, man. What's up?
No, I'm just listening to your perspective of the game.
Okay.
I like to hear people that I respect talk.
I appreciate that.
A lot of these people on your side of the fence, I don't respect.
We're on the same side of the fence now.
No, we're not. We work for two different companies, my guy. We work for two different companies. And a lot of people over there, I don't even listen to them, but of course, I respect and listen to you.
I was curious, because I love the way that I feel like you helped Joel's game develop so much as a Sixers fan, and the actions that you guys would have off of each other, the three-point shot and then feeding him down low. When you sit next to Shaq right now, how would you even approach that relationship if y'all would have played together in the prime, working together and using your three-point shot and his dominance down low?
Are we playing in sort of the end of my era, or are we playing
not the old Shaq.
Your
no,
era?
Both primes.
Medium Shaq, not the old Shaq. Not the Cleveland Shaq. The L.A., Orlando, Miami Shaq.
I would say this. I would say there is a very real possibility. And I lived this, like, with Blake. I lived it with Dwight. I lived it with Joel as well. It's like, if I'm on the court with you, I'm always going to be the guy feeding you in the post. I'm always going to be that next man. So if they double, right, they've either got to make a decision. They got to double off of me from the weak side, or if they double with my guy, I'm the next man. I'm the easiest pass, right? That creates a decision to make. If it happened later in my career, I would have probably grabbed you the first day and been like, hey, here's what I like in terms of like dribble handoffs, screenaways, all that stuff.
You would have did what?
I would have grabbed you.
Grab who?
Grab you.
And you would have told me what you like?
Yeah.
And I'd have been like, do me a favor, my guy.
Yeah, and I know what you would have said.
I would have said, just get in the corner, and when I throw it to you, just make it.
Yeah, but this...
You know who tried that shit? Devin George tried that shit one year. He's a shooter. I said, how about I don't give a fuck what you like? How about when
Devin
I get...
Devin George? Yes. Like, I knew who Devin George is.
I'm like, listen, I know you're a shooter. I know who you are, but we're not doing all that. When you fucking throw it, and they bring three guys at, and I kick it back out, just hit the shot. That's all.
Devin George shot 34% for his career from three.
I would.
There's levels to this, Shaq.
Did you just look that up on the phone? No, but I was just trying to make, you know, the correlation of, you know, shooters. I've always loved playing with shooters.
Yeah.
I've always loved playing with shooters. D. Scott, Glenn Rice. My favorite, one of my favorite shooters, he didn't get a lot of playing time, but Mike Penberthy. You remember him, Mike Penberthy? Yeah, so he used to get in, throw it to him, and that motherfucker would always make it.
To be clear, I said at the end of, towards the end of my career.
Or end of your career?
No, I said towards the end of my career, I would have came up to you. Earlier in my career,
okay.
I would have not said a word to you, and I just would have watched and observed and done whatever you told me.
Okay,
cool. There's a difference.
I apologize.
That was awesome. Before we get to Dr. O'Neal, I have one, now I want to like do a hypothetical. Let's say that young J.J. Redick, actually, like fifth-year J.J. Redick, is on the same team as Hall of Famer Shaquille O'Neal, and you want to connect with him. And J.J. is like, hey, man, like I got this beautiful Bordeaux. I want to split it. And then Shaq goes, man, I don't really drink wine. I want to smoke hookah. Would you smoke hookah with Shaq to connect with your teammate, even though you've never smoked hookah before?
Yes, absolutely.
First of all, I wouldn't be smoking while I'm playing. Stop it.
Yeah.
No NBA player smokes anything while they play.
Exactly.
Statue of limitations are up.
No, it's crazy. I've always had great relationships with my shooters. A lot of shooters have gotten great contracts because of me. They make me look good. I look good. So me and him would have been cool. Would have been cool.
Yeah, I always made an effort. Does that make sense? Like, I always made an effort.
I don't need you make an effort.
No, I don't mean it.
I need you make a shot.
No,
Devin.
No, I don't mean it.
Devin
like,
George, well, let's make the shot.
There's the connection on the court.
Yes.
And I'm actually going to ask you about this later.
Okay.
Then there's the connection off the court, right? The friendship, the camaraderie, all that stuff. But when I say I make an effort, I said, you know, you come as a rookie and there's 14 new guys you got to meet, get to know. And then your second year, maybe two or three get swapped out. Okay, I got to go make, you know, some sort of personal connection with these guys. And it's not, maybe I should have said made an effort. The personal connection part with my teammates, my coaches, training staff, that's what I missed the most. That's what I loved about playing a team sport.
It was fun.
That was fun. You running around, you know, the Phoenix locker room butt ass naked like that.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I have no idea what you're talking about. The statute of limitations ain't up on that yet.
For Dr. O'Neal advice, as we know, Dr. O'Neal is actually a doctor. And if you want to leave one of your questions in the YouTube comments, please do, or send an email to askdroneal@gmail.com. Quick reminder, Dr. O'Neill's advice is for entertainment purposes only, so much so we are making J.J. Redick a doctor as well if he wants to chime in and answer this question. It's kind of an intense one today. Barry D. from Little Rock asks Dr. O'Neill, my fiancé and my mom don't like each other, and they're always talking about each other when the other isn't around. They both want me to take their side, but frankly, Dr. O'Neill, I'm tired of the drama. What would you do if you were in my shoes?
Well, it's a two-answer question. First, you should never let anybody talk about your mother, right? That's period. And, you know, a lot of people like to say if mama don't like her, she's out. But I have a fix for that. You need to go to both of them and say, don't disrespect the other one. And you have to keep them separated until they learn how to coincide and interact with each other. But I ain't going to let nobody talk about my mama. Got me fucked up with that one, cuz, right? You can't have it. And, you know, I wouldn't let my mama talk about a person that I love like that. So I would just have to be respectful and be like, Mom, just, you know, please don't say anything. And, baby, don't ever talk about my mom like that. Just keep them separated until you figure out a way to, you know, so they can get to know each other. Or you can just put them in a room together and just tell them to hash it out.
You know what's really interesting?
You're married, so be careful how you answer.
Now, you know, I was going to say, you know what's really interesting is I got up this morning. My alarm went off at 6 a.m. In Brooklyn. And I took a shower, put my clothes on, took my dog out to pee, said goodbye to my son. The other son was at a sleepover. Said goodbye to my wife, got on a plane, flew down here to Atlanta, and at no time from 6 a.m. to 2:14 p.m. did I think I was going to be giving out relationship advice. So this is a real shock to me.
Yes. So
co-sign with Jackson.
Yeah. The answer is just keep them separated.
Oh, man. I've had a blast today. I'm excited to hear Shaq on The Old Man and the Three. Shaq, anything else for JJ?
Nope. Thank you, brother.
Awesome. JJ Redick, everybody.
He gave the answer I wanted.
Thanks, Adam.
Yeah.
Probably got Dwight over me as the Magic's best big man ever. I fucking dare you to say it.